and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not too bad. How's the week been?
It's all right. I saw something new in the street that I've never seen before that I feel has brought the street to a new low.
A new low?
Yeah. Well, I was sitting, just observing the world going by the other day. And on the opposite side of the road to my house was a group of people. And there was lots of kind of shouting, but they weren't arguing. They were sort of shouting. And then they dispersed. And then a couple of local PCSOs turned up and they just had a little wander around. They didn't seem to do anything. I mean, I don't think PCSOs, I don't know what they were supposed to be doing, but they just had a little look around, then they disappeared, right? And then about 20 minutes later, the little group of people came back and it was like they were looking out for somebody. And I thought, oh, they're obviously kind of keeping an eye out for the police because the police obviously been notified of their presence, right? So they're obviously looking out for the police, I thought. And then their little moped turned up. One of those delivery drivers. He had a little box on the back of his moped.
Yeah.
And they swarmed to it. It was like children running to an ice cream van. I know, because it was so obvious. He was the mobile drug dealer.
Oh, God.
They'd obviously been waiting for. And I thought, I've not seen that on any of the delivery takeaway options that I've used, you know, drugs.
No, I've used a few of those things and I've never seen a big bag of weed or methadone or crack or anything like that. No, it's funny that.
But it was so obvious. The guy turned up on his moped, he stood up and took out of his pocket, handing over a little, I couldn't quite see, because obviously I'm on the other side of the road. Curtain twitcher at this point. I'm curtain twitching. But, little bags of something being exchanged for money. And I thought, well, actually, there's a very good business opportunity there. Why don't we just legalise the drug thing? People are doing it anyway, right? Legalise it and have, I'm not going to name the delivery companies, because he didn't have one of the well-known brands on his box on his moped, so I'm assuming perhaps he worked for himself. But why not just have that as part of the on the thing when you go to Deliveroo option, groceries, takeaway, drugs?
Why not? I mean, poor drug dealers, at least they are quite keen entrepreneurs. They don't mind running their own business. You've got to take your hat off to them, really.
Well, I've watched enough drug gang crime dramas to know that the person on the moped, he's just the little runner. It's the big boys you want to get. What you want to do is you want to take that bloke down on the moped. What I should have done, having just watched a drama about drug gangs, I should have gone out and tackled him, taken him down, right? And then said, who's the boss?
Yeah, I mean, you might have been knifed by about 10 desperate methadone addicts, but yeah, possible.
Well, then I would have gone after they'd had their business. I wouldn't interrupt the business. But I could have been like a hero vigilante. I could have been in the paper. Man, Thornton Heath man takes down drug gang.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd want to mess with that crew myself. Did you even consider phoning the police?
Well, they'd already been, hadn't they?
No, the PCSOs had been. Not had you considered calling the proper police?
No. They're not going to turn up for it. They've all gone.
They won't turn up for a crime, will they?
I'm sort of keeping my eye out. If it becomes a regular thing, but I've not seen it was a one-off at the moment. But, you've got to be careful, because had I decided to go and do the vigilante thing, I used to drink in a pub, right, in London, where you did come to this pub, and I think you can attest that although it was a nice enough pub with some of the people, it was a bit of a dive and a lot of questionable people also in there.
I won't name it. Is this the one that's now shut down?
It no longer exists. It was called the Pimlico Surprise. We might as well name it. It doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
There were some lovely people in there, right? And I became friendly with some of them. But there were also some people you knew you should steer well clear of. Now, you never quite knew. There's always the Billy Bullshitter in a pub.
Yes.
So you never quite knew what the level of bullshit was. But I do remember having a chat with one guy in there who I knew probably dealt drugs, because people used to come in and see him, and the people that used to come in and see him looked rather desperate, shall we say, right? And he did tell me this story about someone he knew once who had been kidnapped by a drug gang and had been tortured in a shipping container somewhere.
Oh, my God. I mean, having been into this place, I can attest it is one of the ropiest. I'm surprised I made it out of there alive.
So, you've got to be, if you're going to be a vigilante around the drugs world, I'd just be very careful is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'd leave it to someone else rather than you go out and be a have-a-go hero.
So anyway, that was exciting. I started to have a bit of excitement in the street, but, you know, I did feel it was a bit of a new low for the road.
Yeah, well, keep an eye out. And, you know, if the radio work ever runs low, you can maybe join in.
Yeah, I want to need a moped. How's your week been, yourself?
It's been very frustrating.
Frustrating? Why?
I've
didn't get your drugs delivered in time.
No, some arsehole phoned the PCSOs. I've been putting together some new garden equipment.
And oh, Jesus Christ! Already. I feel stressed on your behalf.
It's been insufferable. The big one at the beginning of the week was the new barbecue, which was very exciting to get. I didn't realise quite how big it would be, but I'm thrilled with it. And then I had to put it together. And the instructions for this thing were so badly put together. It was like if a chimp had used AI to make instructions for a barbecue. They were incomprehensible and it was driving me batty. Again, I think it said it should only take, maybe 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours to do for one person. I think I did it in about 2.5 days.
Yeah, I never believe that when they say whatever the time they think it says, because you've got to add on, as you say, at least probably a day and a half on top of that. I absolutely detest self-construction of things. Now, I know it means that things can be delivered easier, and obviously some things can't get in the house without being deconstructed, but I despise... I just won't do it anymore. I won't buy things anymore. If I've got to buy something and it needs to be put together myself, I could do without it. It's fine. Don't worry.
The people who I bought it from did offer, and this was, I mean, you can't believe how much I regretted this decision. They said, for an extra £50, we'll install it for you. And I thought at the time, before I started the job, bah, I could put a barbecue together. who needs... I don't need to spend that money. That's staying in my pocket. I can do this in a breeze. And by the end of it, after about my fourth temper tantrum, I thought, I wish I'd have paid them £100 at this point to get this problem out of my life. I was so desperate, I even started enlisting. Now, we normally reserve her just for the benefit of the podcast, but I got so desperate, I turned to Giselle Petrie-Turner.
Oh, really?
ChatGPT, and was desperately sending her photos and saying, what the fuck is this bit? And where the fuck does it go? And bless her, she tried her best to help. She wasn't entirely useless, but she also wasn't entirely accurate either.
Well, no, because she would need AI. I'm not going to call her she, because we've really humanized this thing, and it's not there yet. Because AI would have to know the exact specifics of the barbecue you've bought, wouldn't it? And I don't know if it would have learned that yet, unless like you started that ball rolling. It started to learn about putting that barbecue together, but you would need to be a bit more focused to help someone else in the future. A few years ago, a friend of mine who always came up with very good ideas, but never saw any of them through, which is such a shame because he had some great ideas, right? And years ago, we had a conversation about how this was sort of around the time when YouTube was just starting to really get quite big. You know, can you remember those days when YouTube wasn't quite the beast it is now, but it was becoming it?
Yeah, and sort of said, early sort of 2006-ish, I'd have said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he said, what we should do, Trev, is we should approach IKEA and offer them this idea where all of their products, every single product they've got, we will enlist an expert and make a video of how to put the thing together. So that for every single item they've got, there would be a video available on YouTube so you could watch it. And it probably exists now. I expect it's there. People have probably done it themselves. But back in those days, that wasn't a thing people thought about. We could have made a fortune with that idea.
I've got to say, mate, that is quite ahead of his time. If he clocked onto that early days, that's quite forward thinking of him.
Oh yeah, he had some great, another one of his great ideas that we had years ago. We started working on this idea and I really thought we could get somewhere with this. The technology's moved on so much now that it's almost irrelevant. But he had this idea of basically a radio station for the underground, but you would link up also with pubs that were near railway stations, tube stations, and you would have screens in those pubs that would tell you the live updates of the transport, so that if you had a train that you were aiming for and it was cancelled, you'd know that and you wouldn't have to leave the pub. Yeah, it'd be good for the pub business, it'd be good for the trains, and pubs in train stations now have that. You know, he always came up with great ideas, as I say, never saw them through, and we could have both been incredibly rich by now.
I've got to say, that again seems like a very good idea. I mean, about 20 years ago, possibly.
Well, it was probably more than that. It was probably about 25-26 years ago we were having this conversation.
Unfortunately, now with headphones and apps, that has become completely obsolete. There is no need for that whatsoever, but it would have been a great idea at the time.
I know, back in the day we would have been rich people, we would have been the pioneers of what is now the norm, you know, but we didn't do it, so there we go. That's why I'm still poor and I'm still eking out a living doing stuff, you know, just this and that for a bit of cash.
So I carried on persisting with this fucking barbecue, and it was doing my head in, and then the worst thing happened, and I'd already cut my finger, so I was a little bit annoyed. And Giselle, bless her, in one of my photos, she pointed out, "Oh, please be careful, it looks like you've hurt your hand." And I thought that's very sweet of you to notice, Giselle, but I'm asking about the fucking barbecue. And then she came back to me and said, "I'm sorry, I can no longer help you with these pictures because you've hit your limit for the amount of pictures you can send me. Try again in September."
What?
And I said, "Excuse me, I think you've made a mistake. I already pay 20 quid a month to use you, Giselle."
You're having a row with AI now. I love
this. Yeah, I've fallen out with Giselle. And then she said, "Oh, yes, I can understand. That must be frustrating for you." I thought, yes, it is. And then she said, "But yes, unfortunately, a lot of people don't realise that even if you pay for this version that you're paying for, there is a limit on the amount of..."
If they want to fleece you as much, like every fucking tech company, there's a way where they can fleece you. And they found it already with AI. There it is.
So I looked up the next, and I had to be fair, I think this is a month they wanted. I checked for the next price up because I thought, right, if it's a few more shekels, maybe I can pay out a few more pennies and just maybe upgrade. And £200 a month.
Oh, he's just fuck off. Just fuck off with this shit already. That's why I hate... Oh, my God. That makes me so angry.
So Giselle is now in the bad books. I haven't spoken to her in a while. Then that was finally done and sorted. Then I had a nice new parasol to put together for the patio.
Ooh, look at you getting posh with your parasol.
I know. And on the box...
That's just a big umbrella. That can't be that difficult to put together.
You would have thought so. And the box, once again, boasted one person 10 minutes.
10 minutes,
I thought, okay, well, this has got to be simpler than the barbecue. And to be fair, it definitely was simpler than the barbecue. But it took me and Mrs. Ben about 50 minutes to crack this code. So that was, and she wasn't really that keen on wanting to put it together. Bless her, she persisted and helped because she knew I was getting frustrated, but she couldn't really be bothered with it either. But we got there in the end. So thank you very much, Mrs. Ben, for that. And then I had the other conundrum, and this goes back to your, you know, the street might take a new low, leaving things in the street and whatnot. Yeah. I had a riddle as to what to do with the old broken barbecue.
Okay.
And I thought, oh my God, I've only just finished putting together this behemoth of a new barbecue. So I know how fiddly these things are to A, put together, and B, take apart.
But at least with an old one, you can just, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter what you do with it. It doesn't matter how much you break it. Just hammer it. Pull it to shreds. Doesn't matter, does it?
But then I've also got to book an appointment for the tip, because you can't just turn up to the tip anymore. My bit of the world has gone a bit upmarket for no reason, where you now need to provide your license, provide evidence of who you are, and have booked a slot in advance.
I mean, my local tip, you have to prove you're a resident. They send a little sticker you put on your car, but you don't have to book an appointment. I mean, that's getting ridiculous to book
an appointment. So there's already layers of faff involved in this. And then I was complaining about it to a mate of mine, and he just said, "Listen, mate, between you and me," he said, "I know where you live. I know the road you live on. It's a busy one, right?" I said, "Yeah." And I won't name this guy because I don't want to implicate him. But he said to me, take my word for it.
Fly tip it. You're going to fly tip here.
Take my word for it. Just leave it outside for a little while. And I said, isn't that illegal? And he said, trust me, mate. He never said yes, it is illegal. He just said, trust me. So I thought, oh, I'm not sure if I like this or not. It feels grubby. It has a whiff of crime about it. Trevor, is that a crime?
Well, I want to get clear where you left this old bar, because let's be clear, you've fly-tipped. That's very clear.
I didn't say I'd done anything at this point in the storytelling.
Well, I'm assuming at this point you've done it, and I want to know where you've left it, because I think there are occasions, like I left an old washing machine out in my front garden, so still within my property, in the hope that that would be taken by somebody, and within hours it was gone, right? So it does depend on where you leave it. Now, I know that your property is a little bit hidden from the main road, so it's whether you wheeled this piece of old junk from away from your property, the other side of a fence, if I recall, onto the main road, which then I think does leap into another category of criminality where, yeah, you fly tipped an old piece of shit on a main road. Well done. In a lovely area of natural beauty.
I basically did exactly what you've just said. Yes, it got heaved through the house, straight down the path.
Now, did you do it under the sort of guise of darkness?
No, I didn't. I did it
in broad daylight. You don't care. Just in broad daylight fly tipping. Carefree.
I made a point of putting it so it wasn't blocking the pavement. I was very aware that I don't want to send people with prams and wheelchairs onto the A22. And I didn't want to kill anyone. I'm not a monster. So basically, I did leave it just in front of the pavement boundary, but off onto the grass verge where it was blocking nobody and no one's way. And I thought, I'll keep checking on it. And if it hasn't gone by the end of the day, I'll wheel it back in and take it apart and take it to the tip.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, it's like it wasn't truly theft, because, you know, for it to be theft, you have to want to permanently deprive someone of it, of their item. So I didn't see this as technically fly tipping, because I wasn't going to permanently leave it out. There was no intention to permanently dump it.
So it was like a sort of, you know, like an art installation, a temporary art installation.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I've got just tipping your old shit onto the main road.
I've got to say as well, I also thought if the police came around and started questioning me, I could just say, I'm about to take it apart and load it up into my car, which is parked just around the corner, and then take it to the dump. Prove otherwise. Prove I'm not about to take this to the dump. I was halfway to my car with it, got distracted by an important phone call, and I was planning to return to it to load it into the car and take it to the dump. You can't prove otherwise.
How many days was it out there for?
It took them 90 minutes. 90 minutes and it was gone. I got a little bit alarmed because I was checking on it periodically out of fear. And I did see, I couldn't quite see because of all the sort of shrubbery and bushes, but I could see a van of some description had pulled over with flashing lights on. And I thought, oh, for fuck's sake. It turned out it was just some hazard lights of this van they were loading it onto. So I was very relieved to see that. But yeah, it took them less than 90 minutes and it was gone. And I thought, actually, imagine if I'd been moving house and I had just left it for a minute, because God knows how fast they were from when they saw it to how quickly they took it. I don't think they hang around to ask or find out.
I don't know how they do it. The speed at which these people that are on the lookout for scrap metal, that's basically what they're after, because that's where they make their money, I think. The speed, I can only assume they have access to satellites and are constantly monitoring everywhere. I don't know. It's like they must have some sort of like bat signal, or perhaps they're just really in tune with scrap metal. They can almost sense it, you know, or scrap electrical items. They sense it. It's incredible. I mean, I didn't mind them taking the washing machine. I mean, I don't know what they do with it. I should worry that they're probably fly tipping all the rest of the shit. They take what they want and then fly tip everywhere else. That's my only concern. But it saved me £30 on paying to have it taken away.
Oh, I mean, it was a massive convenience for me to have it removed like that. It was absolutely brilliant. Then I had this pang of guilt that, have I just fly-tipped? Is that illegal? Have I broken the law? Then I had a bit of guilt about that for a while. And then the strangest thing happened. I started to feel a bit affronted by the whole thing that I had caused. Because I thought, if I had just been moving house, you'd have just nicked my fucking barbecue.
I don't think you can get on your high horse over it, mate, after you've fly-tipped.
So then I thought, shall I go and file a police report that I'm the victim of theft? But then I thought, we probably don't need to add in filing a false police report on top of fly-tipping, because that's just making things worse.
Thing is, I think we could very easily solve who did it.
You think so?
Yeah.
Go on.
It's your mate, innit? He's the one who said, trust me, put it out there, it'll be gone. He's been waiting for you to do that. He's been waiting, he's been sitting in his van, waiting and watching. He saw you put it out. He's made, what, 50 quid on scrap metal out of that. He's a happy man. You know his address, report him.
I'd never thought of that. You're nicked, son. You're nicked.
Now, let me ask you, Ben, when you completed putting the barbecue together, did you have what I would call a mic drop moment?
As in, did I come up with a really clever one-liner and sort of stamp off victoriously?
Well, you don't really need to have a one-liner, just the fact that you've done up the last screw and that's enough. That's your mic drop moment. It's done. It's finished.
I did feel a certain sense of victory. And I think rather than celebrate, I think I told ChatGPT to go fuck itself. And then went and sat indoors and sulked for a while.
Well, that's probably a good way of doing it. Because I think mic drop moments, for me, they are often like big things, aren't they? They are, you've said something at the right time, the best line you could come up with, which very rarely happens. The number of times in my life that I've had lines ready to use and then I've never used them because they would have been nice mic drop moments, but then I've always bottled it. So, for example, when I left school, I had this whole thing in my head where I was going to say goodbye to a couple of the teachers and say, if I never see you again, it'll be too soon, you know. Ooh. Something like that. And of course I didn't. When it came to saying goodbye to some of the teachers who did make the effort at least to say, come and say goodbye, I was like, oh, goodbye, sir, goodbye. And very sort of reverential, when really I just wanted to say, fuck you. I hated every moment of your lesson. Do you know what I mean? So you never, the best mic drop moment I probably had was as I was leaving the school. My worst teacher, my art teacher, who I just hated with a passion. And he was also the head of the sixth form. And I wasn't staying to the sixth form because I was getting the hell out of that shithole as quickly as I could. Right. And as we were walking down the corridor, I bumped into him. And I was with another mate who was also leaving the school. And he said, I'll see you next week for the sixth form induction, boys. And I said, we're leaving school, so we won't be there. And he said, oh, you have to come anyway. Now, I'm assuming that he was joking. I just said, goodbye, sir. And that was almost a mic drop moment.
Wow. Just that, I mean, what was his reaction to that?
I can't remember. I think we just walked off, so I don't think I hung around to see a reaction. I'm assuming he was winding us up anyway about it, unless he just was trying to have one last power trip over us. I have no idea. But I can't think of many other times in my life where I've had mic drop moments. But then, this week, I was reading a survey that's been done of the Great British public, Ben, of their mic drop moments. So this is the Great British public's opinion of what their greatest mic drop moments are.
Okay, this should be good.
Well, some of these, I just think, are these really mic drop moments? Right, well, here's the first one. Knowing the answer to a quiz show question. Now, it depends on the quiz show, I think, doesn't it? Whether that's a mic drop moment. If I get something right on Only Connect, that's a mic drop moment for me because that's very rare. But if I get a question right on, let's say, Tipping Point,
yeah,
that's not a mic drop moment. I find that Tipping Point, generally, I'm not saying every question I can get, but most of them you sort of think, these are too easy. I don't know why Tipping Point has such easy questions, but that's not a mic drop moment. It very much depends on the quiz show.
Yeah, I agree. I think if I was to get a question right on The Chase, I'd think, well, so what? If I was to get a question right on University Challenge, I'd probably start phoning people and telling them.
We see The Chase, I think, that's kind of in the middle. I think in The Cash Builder, I do quite well. But some of them at the table. But what really annoys me, because I watch The Chase religiously, as you know, I record it every day and I watch it every day. And I do get very annoyed at the contestants on The Chase. And it does depend on the type of contestant that goes on. I would never see the point of going on a quiz show for the sake of going on a quiz show. I would go in with a strategy, you know? And I never understand people who, when they're at the table in The Chase, if people don't know The Chase, you do the cash builder where you answer a number of questions in a minute, and that's a certain amount of money you've won. Each question's worth £1,000, right? Then you go to the table and The Chaser will offer you either more to be closer or a lesser offer to have more chance of getting through, right?
Yeah, that's how it works.
But once you're at the table, you get multiple choice. And often there's a clue in the question. And I just don't understand people who just don't think about the clue in the question. That drives me insane. I just think the answer's staring you in the face a lot of the time if you just think. And then you get some of them to go, oh, I don't know, it's just a guess. What do you mean it's just a guess? Think about it. What's the point of going on?
They also say that really annoying thing of, oh, it's harder when you're here under the pressure of the lights.
You know, well, it probably is, right? It probably is. I doubt I do as well in the cash builder as I do at home when I'm there. I get that. But I just feel like if you're going on The Chase, you've watched The Chase long enough to know that often there's a clue in the question. Now, I'm not saying there always is. Sometimes you look at it and think, I don't know this. I can't see the clue. That's just based on your knowledge. But sometimes it's so obvious. Do you know the other phrase I hate that some of the contestants say?
Go on.
Oh, my partner's watching at home. They'll kill me if I don't know this because Star Wars is their favourite film. So, yeah, it's their favourite film, not yours. So why would they kill you for not knowing that? You know, or my partner will kill me, they're a doctor, you know. It's like, oh, right, so you should know all the medical stuff as well, should you? I mean, that's stupid, but I hate that phrase.
Something else that irritates me whilst we're on this bugbear is on the celebrity versions of these quiz shows, I always feel the questions are really dumbed down to stroke their egos and make them look a bit more intelligent than they are.
I don't know if it's for that. I think it's probably just to ensure that charities win some money. I would imagine it's more for that. But yes, I think they do dumb it down a little bit. I tend not to watch the celebrity versions. I sort of think I'd rather watch the general public make idiots of themselves. here's another mic drop moment, according to the great British public. Opening a very tight jar. Is that a mic drop moment, really? Is that where we are as a British population, that we are so bored and beaten down by all the shit that actually opening a jar is the great exciting moment for us?
There is obviously a certain satisfaction of finally getting the release and the pop of a particularly stubborn jar lid. But I don't think the person who wrote this article knows what mic drop means.
Well, they've got it and asked the questions to the great British public. I don't think they've really thought about the questions. But, I mean, there is a mic. I think there can be a mic drop moment when you open a jar that no one else can open. I mean, that's, you know, when people are, oh, I can't open the jar. And then, Trevor, you give it a go. There you go. Oh, that's a lovely feeling. That's almost mic drop.
Yes, and then again, going back to cliches, then cue the person immediately who tried it before. Oh, well, I loosened it.
Oh, yeah, no, you always get that. No, you didn't. If you loosened it, why didn't you go all the way and open it? Did you think, oh, I'll just, you know, Trev needs a little bit of an ego boost. I'll just loosen it, then he can open it. No, you've done fuck all, mate. Piss off.
Yeah, if you genuinely loosened it to give me an ego boost, you wouldn't then tell me you'd done that immediately after I opened it.
You're covering up your own inadequacy. Yeah. That's what's happening here. Okay, here's another one. Sailing through multiple green traffic lights in a row. Now, that does always feel good, though, when that happens, doesn't it? I don't know if that's a mic drop moment.
Again, either the person who wrote this article doesn't know, or the general public en masse don't know what a mic drop moment is. That's just good luck. That just feels good. That's not a mic drop moment.
How many green lights do you have to go through before you start noticing, though? I was on a journey last week, and I didn't say it out loud. You know, sometimes in a car, like you've got to say that sort of stuff out loud. But I noticed that we were having a very good run on green lights. But it was probably a good sort of 3 or 4 sets before I really started thinking, oh, we're on a good run here. And it's almost felt like I don't want to say it out loud because I could jinx this. It becomes sort of a little game in my own head now.
When my dad and my sister used to go to the football, she had a bit of a superstition going for a while where she would base the likelihood of a good Fulham performance on how good the green lights were on the way to the game. Complete nonsense, obviously, but that was she thought that was a good omen. If they sailed through with a lot of green lights, that was a good sign that Fulham would do well.
And how often did that work out?
Rarely.
But you still do it, don't you? That's the madness of a football fan superstition. We all do it. We all have those weird things that you do. Right, here's another one. Phoning the doctor and getting an appointment straight away. Well, I do think that that's worthy of a mic drop moment these days, because getting hold of a doctor to make an appointment, not even getting hold of the doctor, just phoning the surgery, getting an appointment. We now have to do it. I don't know what your surgery is like, Ben, but if I want to... an appointment now, I have to do it through an app that you phone up the surgery, and the answer phone says, do it through the app. So you go to the app. I think I've tried for the last couple of years on this app to make appointments. I don't think I've managed to make one on the app. It's just a waste of my time. I'd rather sit in the queue where it's saying you're now number 47. I'd rather sit on that than try this fucking app that doesn't fucking work. It's useless. It's useless.
It sounds like your doctor's surgery's gone the way of my tip. It's all gone really technological and for no fucking reason. My bugbear with the doctor's surgery is that, first of all, you call up and then you get the gatekeeper... the doctor's surgery assistant or whatever, like receptionist.
Yeah.
So then they want all your information. You thought, well, no, I don't really want to tell you about my particular ailments. You're not the one I want to speak to. I want to speak to the doctor, the man with the, or the woman with the medical degree. You're just the gobshite who thinks that you control the keys to the doctor. And then she will judge if you warrant time with the doctor, who will then phone you back for a telephone assessment. And then based on the assessment, the doctor will decide if it's worth you coming in to see them. And you just think, where are all these extra layers coming from to this? It used to be simple. I mean, it used to still be annoying, and you'd have to phone up at the crack of dawn and, 8 o'clock sharp when they opened the phone lines. Yeah. It was a mad rush. But at least we all knew the rules. This just becomes stupid now. And I think I blame COVID. I think
it was the start of it. Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Lots of businesses changed and used COVID as an excuse to keep people away, which made sense at the time. But they never reverted back.
I also think
it's so annoying.
Without, because I'm not having to go to the NHS. I love the NHS. Certainly in my surgery, I think they are so overrun that actually they want to try and avoid as many people on the phone, because, as I say, you phone up and it's like, you're number 47 in the queue. So they want to avoid it. But I just wish that they had an app that actually worked. You go to this app, right? And you have to go through all the things. It asks you symptoms, and it's all AI, I guess. It's sort of all AI. And then it says, looking for an appointment. And as I say, I think 100% of the time it's always come back, we can't find any appointments at your surgery at the moment. What is the point of the app then?
That's ridiculous.
I think it is a bit of a mic drop moment if you can get through to the surgery and get an appointment.
Possibly. I still don't think it's a... I always just associate mic drop moments with saying something very clever, not just getting a bit lucky or achieving something. But yeah, okay, I'll give it to you.
Right, here's another one. And I think this could be a mic drop moment. Throwing something into a bin from a distance in front of others. I mean, that always feels good, doesn't it? I mean, even if you're on your own and you get it in the bin, you sort of wish people were there to have seen it. Because the number of times you miss, of course, that generally is when other people are around. And then you have to do that walk of shame to the bin to pick up what you've now thrown on the floor and put in the bin.
See, I feel the key to that moment is having the self-control to not celebrate and just be as nonchalant as possible. Like, oh yeah, I do that sort of thing all the time, I'm the Fonz over here. Don't celebrate, act like it's completely normal. I'm just usually this cool, ladies and gents. Bosh.
Do you do that thing where once you've done it once, you sort of try again but move the bin a little bit further away?
It depends how bored I am, really.
Well, sometimes it's just nice bit of way to feel better about yourself, isn't it? I'm not a complete failure. I can at least throw something in a bin. What I get really annoyed with myself about sometimes is that I'm right by the bin and I still manage to miss it. I'm not even trying to throw something from distance. I'm just trying to put something in the bin and I miss it. And I just think, how have you done that? How have I managed to miss the fucking bin when I'm right next to it?
The amount of shots I've managed to miss like that as well is incredible. And you think, actually, it would almost be harder to miss this shot than it would be to make it.
Sometimes I've got a kitchen bin and I'm doing the washing up and the bin's right next to me. And I might have, a bit of tissue on a plate or something, you know, a serviette or something. And it's got a swivel top bin on the lid. So I'll push the bin down, the lid down so it's open, go to place the tissue in the bin and still miss it. It's sort of bounce off the edge. What the fuck's going on? Hate that. Dreadful. Right? Here's another one. Predicting a plot twist in a book or a film before everyone else.
I did that. And it had the reverse effect. Mrs. Ben first started showing me one of her favourite series, and I absolutely predicted and nailed the plot twist to the finale of series one. And rather than thinking, oh wow, he's cool, or isn't he intelligent, she was just livid. She just thought, how the hell have you guessed that? You've absolutely ruined it for yourself now. I was smug as anything, of course, but it didn't make me look good or cool or smart. It just annoyed her, so I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay, here's another one. Winning an argument with your partner. Now, how do you feel when you win an argument with Mrs. Ben?
It's a satisfaction you're best told to keep to yourself, because it can be, because gloating after winning an argument, they're already pissed off they've lost the argument, so gloating about it will just dig you deeper. I would shut up about it, be secretly pleased inwardly, but yeah, I wouldn't mention that you're pleased with yourself.
See, I don't like arguing with people, really. I try and avoid arguments as much as possible, so I sort of don't know whether I'd feel any satisfaction of winning an argument, because all I'd be thinking is, why did we have the argument in the first place? I'd rather we didn't have the argument. This sort of satisfaction of winning the argument doesn't really make me feel any better at all.
I think there is some, and maybe it is just a bit of smugness and arrogance, but I think there is something satisfying about when you present someone a completely irrefutable bit of logic which stops them in their tracks, and it proves you've won the argument, and they're forced to go, you are right. I think it takes a bigger person than me to not feel smug about that.
I wish that it would happen on a sort of international level, because when you see what's going on in the world a lot of the time and how terrible it is, and the behaviour of people in charge around the world whose logic is so flawed. I mean, someone like Trump, for example, you know, a lot of his logic is so flawed, and most leaders are, you know, and you sort of just wish that there'd be that moment where they would concede that they're wrong, because it's such a flawed proposition that they're putting forward, or an idea, and you sort of feel like the world should be able, the rest of the world should be able to say, whoa, hang on, that's not really a logical argument. And they should go, oh yeah, but they just won't back down. I'd like to see world leaders who are just about to make stupid decisions back down, and they won't.
Well, that's because it's far too tribal. It's no longer about who's right and who's wrong. It's not each case of an argument is individually assessed. It's, is my team the winner? And if they're not, then I'll just flim-flam, deny, call you a liar. I'll never just accept, like Donald Trump, for example, could say the sky is green, and he'd probably still have some people on his team who, rather than admit he's wrong about something, would just say, oh, well, you know, technically it is, if you look at it at the right angle, you could describe that as green.
Yeah, this is how wars expand and get worse and start. So, you know, just my message to the world, really, just stop this shit, please. Right, final one. Nabbing a seat during rush hour on your commute. I must admit, I don't commute anymore, but when I used to have to commute in rush hour, getting a seat, that was a moment. I'd relish that. That was like, oh, yes. I haven't got to be pushed and shoved about while standing by the door in the corridor of a train. I hated that. So nabbing a seat in rush hour, I love that. Love it.
Yeah, it's all well and good though until a pregnant woman or an elderly person comes along and then you think, oh shit, now I've got to give it up.
Pretend you don't see. That's the best way. No, you've got to give your seat up. Of course you have. And you, I'm amazed actually at the number of people who don't give seats up these days. I've seen it before. I was on a train very recently and I did give up my seat and no one else offered. And I just thought, what's going on? Like, there should be a whole plethora of people going, do you want to sit down? Please sit down. You know, madness.
Well, I mean, you could argue. I mean, I wouldn't. I would give up my seat, but I suppose you could argue I've paid to get on this train. My money is as valid as yours. I didn't vote for you to get pregnant. Things you shouldn't say out loud, but might run through your head, you know.
But you've used a pregnant woman, and we've heard your problems with mothers in the past. We know how you feel about mothers.
But what? Oh, you're talking about my child parent parking base.
Yeah, we know.
That wasn't specifically directed at mothers.
Well, parents, people have children. You seem to have a problem with people who have children. We know where you stand. What about an elderly person, though, Ben? What about if an old man or an old lady gets on the train? She's a bit doddery. You can see she's struggling. Do you think, I didn't vote for you to get old?
Well, I mean, that's a bit less out of their control, really. And you can't even blame them for not being faster to get to the seat. I think I'd probably want to look around and find someone younger than me sitting down and suggest that they should be giving up their seat, because, you know, I need to get some use out of these legs while I've still got them.
And would you say that to someone younger? Would you actually say, look, I think you're younger than me, you should give up your seat? Would you have that conversation with someone?
Well, you know, if they're young enough where they don't know they could beat me in a fight, I think I'd probably pick on a child.
Okay, yeah, okay. Right. Your hatred of children once again coming through. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations. Got anything for us this week, Ben?
I've got something for Cautionary Corner.
Oh, for Cautionary Corner, okay.
It's the new series of Dexter Resurrection.
Your relationship with Dexter is very complicated, isn't it?
It really is. Now, I won't bore you all again with this, but basically, I've always had a massive, massive problem with how Dexter series tend to finish. I live with someone who loves it, and she'll argue to the death that there is a justified reason for how they end and it does make sense to her, blah blah blah. I usually love the series, hate the ending. We're halfway through. It's on Paramount Plus if you're interested. It does cost a bit of money, about $4.99 a month with adverts, so I should point out I'm furious about that as well. And the thing that's ruining it for me is this time is the first time ever I'm actually not enjoying the series as much. And it's because of product placement. They warn you it's taking place, so you've clocked it at the beginning of the show, product placement, and you think, oh, really? And then there'll be a scene, and just for the sake of it, someone will pop in some Apple AirPods, and then we'll start listening to the Bee Gees. And then someone's cleaning up a murder scene, and they'll just pop on their headphones and start listening to the Bee Gees again. And someone's going to make
the Bee Gees?
I think it's because it's staying alive, so they're sort of at least trying to sort of play into the murdery theme a little bit. But they've done it two or three times now. Well, I tell you what, I need to make an important phone call. I'll just pull out my Apple iPhone and show it to the camera.
Sounds awful.
And it's once you notice it's happening, and once you realise it offers nothing to the plot and it is just a shameless cash grab, it really turns you off the whole series. I should say we're about halfway through. I've got another 5-6 weeks to wait and keep paying for the advertised Paramount Plus service. However, I will temporarily place it in Cautionary Corner. It might come back and surprise me, but at the moment, it's on the naughty step where it belongs.
Right, well, I mean, interestingly, on your sort of recommendation, although warning about the ending, I have, over the last few months, watched all of the original Dexter series, all 10 of them. And I'm with you that the end, I wasn't as disappointed by the ending as you were, but I felt it was a weak ending.
If anyone's not seen it, we won't spoil it.
No.
But I was screaming at the TV. I thought it made absolutely zero sense.
The thing I found with Dexter was there was so much that I hated about it. And yet, there was enough to keep me watching. I mean, the characters are so annoying, a lot of them. Like, there were so many that I was wishing would be killed off as the series went through. They were so annoying. Some of the acting was dreadful. Some of the script is dreadful. And yet, there's something about it that kept me watching. But I'm not sure I will go beyond the original 10.
Okay.
We shall see. And certainly, that's not encouraged me to watch the newest series in any way, shape or form.
I think you've still got to do the whole childhood years bit first as well. There's another series you've got to catch up on.
Yeah. One day, maybe. When I'm really bored.
What about you? Have you got anything to recommend?
I've got a couple of things. A documentary on Netflix. This is one of those documentaries that I've been meaning to watch for quite a while. I just never got round to it. I finally watched it this week. It's only two episodes. It's called Last Stop Larimer. It's true crime. Well, it's not crime necessarily. We don't really know what's happened. It's Larimer is this tiny little village in the middle of nowhere in the outback of Australia. There's only a handful of people who live there, right? And one of the townspeople goes missing. No one knows what happened to him. And it's just the story of who might have done it. And it's kind of talking to all the people that live there. And the one thing about it is they're all fucking nuts. They're all mental. Right? It's such a bizarre thing. I think it basically proves to me that living in the middle of nowhere with just a few people isn't good. It can't be good for your mental being because they all go nuts. And also, I'd imagine the heat, being in the middle of the outback with temperatures of sort of 40-odd degrees a lot of the time, I think you just go mental. Just all of that. It's just that it's the most bizarre thing. They sort of introduce a new person and they're just as mad as the rest. So is there anyone who lives here who isn't completely nuts? It's the most bizarre documentary.
It sounds interesting. Without spoilers, is there a resolution? Because I don't often like getting involved in true crime stuff where there is no answer.
I'm afraid there isn't. There isn't a resolution. You're sort of left to decide for yourself who may or may not have done something. I think I know who did it from watching the documentary, but it might be that the guy just disappeared. No one knows. That's the weird thing about it. But it's just the characters who live in this place, and just the fact that they're all nuts is just compelling viewing. It's only two episodes, so it's not like you've got to invest a huge amount of time in it. It's just interesting to see how living somewhere so remote cannot be good for you. It just cannot. You just go mad.
Well, that sounds good. I should probably give that a watch, but I won't like the fact that I don't know, but I'll still give it a go.
I know. It is annoying. It is annoying there's no resolution, but it's just, there isn't. There's nothing
fair enough
about that. And the other thing I'm going to recommend, again, something I've come a little bit late to, is a comedy on the BBC iPlayer called Such Brave Girls. There's two series of it. I've just finished the first series. It's a bizarre comedy. It's quite dark. The weird thing about it is none of the main characters are likeable, and I normally struggle with that. I normally need someone I can root for. I think there's one who is at least a little more likeable than the others, who's the kind of the main character. So the story is, it's a mother and two daughters, and they're all just very manipulative. One of the sisters, and the mother in particular. The other sister, she's kind of got her mental health issues. It's kind of biographical from the writer Kat Sadler, who plays the main sort of sister. But it's just a bit out there. It's a bit different to anything I've seen before, and it is quite funny that the mother's relationship with her boyfriend, that's unfolding very interestingly and quite humorously. So I'm looking forward to see where that goes in series two. So I really recommend it.
Nice one.
So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trivenbill on X and on Blue Sky, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.